This is All Things ANSYS, a podcast from the technical support staff at PADT. Episode 7, ANSYS training and doing customization of ANSYS products.
Welcome to Episode 7 of All Things ANSYS, our podcast. I'm here today with Matt and Ted. And this is, like I said, this is our seventh podcast. We're really excited to talk about some cool things today. But before we get started, I want to point out the fact that we've hit over 1,000 downloads of the podcast, 1,014 to be specific. And we're averaging about 160 downloads per episode, with our episode on topological optimization being the most popular, with over 250 downloads of that particular episode. So we'd love for you to spread the word. We've been getting a couple emails from folks. Please do consider emailing us at podcast@padtinc.com with questions and suggestions. And let other people know that we have it, your coworkers and other ANSYS folks, so we can grow our listenership. And my goal is now to get an average of 250 listeners per episode by episode 10. So we've got three more to go to get there. October is a really busy month. We mentioned that 2 weeks ago in the podcast, and we're in the middle of it right now. So I'm running 3 days behind. I don't know about the other guys, but I think you guys are behind as well. So we're going to make this a relatively short episode and just focus on two really important topics. So let's go ahead and do introductions. Usually we go around the room to my left, but that's not possible. So I think, Ted, you're to my left where I'm sitting right now. So go ahead and introduce yourself.
Sure. This is Ted Harris. I manage our simulation support group here at PADT. Been an ANSYS user for a little over 30 years. So still enjoying learning new stuff just about every day.
Cool. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, this is Matt Sutton. I've been at PADT for, I guess, a little over 16 years. I've been using ANSYS not quite as long as Ted, probably coming up on 18 years or so now, and I primarily do the customization stuff at PADT. That's sort of mostly my day job.
And where are you located, Matt, so folks know?
Yeah, so right now I'm located in Arkansas, a little town called Harrison, which is sort of in the north central part of the state.
So he is not to my left, he's to my far right as I face north out there. So we always talk about how PADT has employees in multiple locations, and Matt's one of our remote employees, and he works from his hometown there. Or is that your hometown or near your hometown? Yeah.
It is. It actually is my hometown, yes.
Okay, yeah. So glad to have him join us over Skype. All right, so today our first topic is actually we want to talk with Ted about training. ANSYS is a very expensive piece of software. It is so much easier to use than it was when I learned it and when Ted learned it, but it's still, there's a lot there, and training has a huge benefit. And we get a lot of questions, especially from younger engineers who, maybe haven't been exposed to what we consider traditional training, what it's all about and what the benefits are. So I wanted to just introduce the concept of ANSYS training and ask Ted a few questions. So let's start off, Ted, with just kind of explaining, if you're an ANSYS user, what options do you have for training?
Yeah, sure. There are several options these days. Within the ANSYS help, there are, a lot of great information. There are example problems. There is also a verification manual, which is either contained in the help or for ANSYS Mechanical, the verification manual downloaded from the ANSYS customer portal. So those are good examples for starting points for how do I do a specific type of simulation. They're fairly simple problems, but at least they show you what goes into doing a certain type of simulation. So online help, and by online help I mean the help that gets loaded when you install ANSYS. Now, and then there's the ANSYS customer portal, and there are a lot of great examples and how to demonstrations, video type stuff on the ANSYS customer portal for a lot of different topics. And we won't go too much into the training offerings by ANSYS Inc. Certainly ANSYS Inc. has a lot of training offerings online and in person. So that's certainly an option for those of us that are, you know, not within our local PADT territory. And then, you know, we get to training at PADT or in you know, other channel partners like PADT provide training as well. So the training that we offer is, you know, in a variety of different classes. We have information on our website, padtinc.com, on the different training classes that we offer. And so we have a calendar, a training calendar throughout the year of different classes. However, that's really meant to be sort of a template or a skeleton to show the classes that we offer. And we typically end up not getting enough students to hold each of those classes that show up on our calendar, but at least it shows, you know, what classes we offer. So we can teach classes at our offices, PADT offices in the Southwest, or we can teach classes at customer sites. So then we can also get into in-person training versus web-based training. But I think we'll get into that a little bit later. And then as far as what sort of topics people can get trained on. So we start with introductory topics up through advanced topics, and pretty much all of the major tools that are involved in the ANSYS product suite. So mechanical, and by mechanical, we mean structural and thermal and CFD, electromagnetics, as well as the geometry creation tools, which is primarily space claim these days. And, you know, a lot of the additional tools like Design Explorer and, you know, other topics like that that are very useful. And I guess we'll get into a little bit later the in-person interaction.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's actually leads into the next question, which is kind of, you know, you have your option of, you know, ANSYS offers some online training options, and you can, of course, read books and things like that. But what sets apart coming to PADT for training, or PADT coming to you for training, from maybe the other options that are out there?
Right. So I'm glad you mentioned books, because that, but, you know, there are some resources available, such as our PADT APDL guide, ANSYS Parametric Design Language Guide, that's available. And certainly that's a great resource, and there are other great resources. But our experience, and we've been teaching ANSYS classes for a long time. I know I've been doing it since 1999, and others at PADT like you, Eric, even before then. So we've got a lot of experience in what works well and what doesn't. And our experience is that you really just cannot beat that in-person instruction, where you have an instructor who's looking at what you're doing and can look over your shoulder, and you can ask questions on the fly. And there's also a benefit to having other students in the class as well, because they may ask a question about something that you hadn't even thought of, and based on the questions they ask and the answers that are provided, you can really learn a lot more than you would just watching a video or even sitting in on a web-based class. So we do web-based classes when our customers really insist on that. We've experimented in the past with you know, scheduled web-based classes, and our experience is they just do not work as well as in person. Now, we realize not everyone can attend an in-person class, and, you know, that's certainly understandable, but we really feel that the best learning experience is being live in person in a training room with an instructor and with other students.
Yeah, I know that when I take online classes, I don't pay attention. I mute myself and do something else in another screen. So it's not always the best way to go, if I'm any indication to it.
Yep.
So one of the questions we get a lot is custom classes. You know, I know we do custom classes. I'm not going to ask you if we do, but why don't you talk a little bit about what a custom class means and the different levels of customization?
Sure. Yeah. So as I mentioned, on our website, we have a list of classes that we offer, and oftentimes those meet the needs of a customer, you know, especially if they're just getting started with ANSYS products, or, you know, they want to learn something more advanced, like they have a lot of nonlinear contact problems or nonlinear materials. So we do have classes in those specific topics and for CFD topics and as well. But occasionally you have customers that, you know, maybe they already know a whole bunch of how to perform ANSYS simulations, but they're struggling with maybe a certain nonlinear material model, or they want to get trained in some nonlinear contact capabilities in certain nonlinear material models, but not all of the topics that fall into each of those classes are relevant to what they're trying to do. So one level of customization is to set up a class that uses portions of existing training offerings. Mm-hmm. And so that way we can just sort of pick and choose the topics that we present and put the content together packaged for a day or two of training just for that specific customer. And then certainly going beyond that is custom developed training content. And, you know, to be quite honest, developing training content is a lot of work. We've done it here at PADT. But that's certainly going to be more a more expensive option than using off-the-shelf content. But, you know, occasionally we do have customers that are doing very specific things with ANSYS, and they really need a custom class that goes through the start to finish of something special that they're trying to do. And so we do offer the development of not only lecture type material, but also workshops that apply in those instances. But, you know, that's understandably going to be a higher cost because we have more labor going into developing content like that.
Right, right. And so, I mean, I think one of my takeaways is the cost-effective way to do it is to take the existing content and modify it to be a custom
right.
syllabus,
yep.
basically. But we do custom classes using customers' material or topics that aren't already covered, and just costs a little bit more for that. So
right.
Yeah.
And
cool.
A lot of that ties into customization mm-hmm. of ANSYS, which mm-hmm. we'll get into
yep.
with Matt.
Yeah.
As well, but when we're developing custom applications for ANSYS, a lot of times that's coupled with custom training that goes along with that.
Very good point. Very, very good yeah. point. Yeah, that's a good point. So one of the things that I want to talk about that's a bit of a sore subject is a lot of times customers will come to us and say, I want the introduction to whatever ANSYS product it is, and that's a 3-day standard class. Can you teach it to me in a day? What are your thoughts about that, and what has been our experience with that in the past?
Yeah, certainly we understand that, you know, it's very hard to send people to training. It's expensive, not only just, you know, the cost per person per day, but also the time it takes for employees to be away from other projects. There's, you know, overhead costs involved in that too. That being said, you know, if a class is a 2-day class, it's not because, you know, we're trying to stretch out the amount of time it takes to teach. It's because really to get through the relevant content, it does take a couple of days. So, you know, over time, over the last several years, we've encountered customers that have really wanted us to compress, say, a 3-day class into 2 or a 2-day class into 1. And we've, I would say, sort of reluctantly agreed mm-hmm. to do that. But virtually every time we do that, when we look at the reviews from the class, the students complain that the pace was too fast. It should have been a longer duration class. So, you know, I think that the reality is we understand the business side of it, that making a class shorter is more advantageous from a cost and time standpoint. However, the quality of the class really suffers, and I think the quality of learning by the students really suffers doing it that way. So, you know, there's only so much that you can fit into a day, and, you know, it's just frustrating. I think it gets to be frustrating for the students and frustrating for the instructors. So, I mean, the customer is the customer, and we certainly try to the customer's request as best as we can.
I think something too, real quick, just to kind of dovetail on that is, and Ted, you probably have much more experience with this than me, but having a class that's on site versus a class maybe that's at PADT or at a training facility somewhere that's not real close to someone's desk or their email, or you know, just how it can be a lot of times more effective for the student to try to fully get away from work as opposed to try to jump in and out of the class throughout the day because they've got all these little fires and so forth that are going on that are vying for their attention.
Yep, that's very true. And, you know, that easily segues into the environment of the training. And, you know, some companies really like to have the classes at our PADT facilities so their employees can get away for the day. And then we also have other customers that really want to have us on site for one reason or another, and we're certainly happy to accommodate both. But as Matt said, by reducing the distractions for the students while they're in the class certainly helps their learning experience. It's very typical that when we teach a class at a customer site that someone comes and, you know, has to speak with one of the students in the class. Maybe it's a manager. Maybe there's some panic situation. Or maybe they just have a meeting that they get called into. And, you know, while that's happening, that's decreasing their learning ability while they're in the class. Yeah, and just the environment of the training in general. I mean, here at our facility, we have a nice big room that we use for large classes, and we really try to minimize the distractions. I think the worst environment I ever had was teaching a class at a customer site where they wanted the training done very quickly and so scheduled it, but then could not get a meeting room in which to hold the class. So we held the class in somebody's office at a table. It was, I think, you know, a fairly small class we could fit at this table. But while we were going through the material in the class, the guy in his office was sitting at his desk taking phone calls and having, you know, people come in for personal meetings and stuff. And, you know, so it worked. I mean, you know, that was the situation required at that time, and we certainly made it work. But it wasn't ideal.
Yeah, I think the takeaway is we'll do whatever the customer wants to make the training happen, but you can get a lot more value if you don't compress the classes. Have them in at least an area where people aren't coming and going and being distracted, because yeah, that's got to be the weirdest one we've ever done. I did teach a class in someone's house once because sadly the class was on 9/11 and we were near the airport, so we decided to move from the airport in LAX to a safer location because we didn't know what was going on. But yeah, that was kind of a strange one as well. It was a while ago. Okay, anything else you guys want to add about training before we move on?
Well, I guess the one key takeaway is that when students are forced to drink from a fire hose, so to speak, it's really too much information too fast. So that's, you know, really going against the idea of trying to compress a three-day class into two or a two-day class into one. So the environment for the training and the duration for the training are critical things to help make it successful. And then, as we said earlier, in-person training really just seems to be the best experience as far as the quality of training for the students and what they're able to get out of the class to take back as practical knowledge.
True. Matt, do you have anything?
Yeah, no, I would just agree with Ted, especially on that last point. Just don't underestimate the value of not only being able to ask questions and because you're there in person, but, you know, a lot of times in the training classes that I've taught, you know, that one question will maybe lead us on a tangent a little bit, but it's a very productive tangent, and you wouldn't be able to necessarily have that happen if you're just, you know, kind of confined to a web-based or something where you can't actually interact as easily.
That's a really good point. And I've definitely observed that the few times I've taught recently.
It's also pleasing to me to see students learning from each other.
Yeah.
That often happens in a class where while they're doing on workshops, you know, somebody will have a problem, and before our instructors are able to get over there and help them, other students are chiming in, and they're learning from each other. And, you know, I think that's another big plus of the in-person training.
Good point. The other thing I'll add from a management standpoint and a planning standpoint is when you're planning for training, there's the cost of the class itself, which is actually relatively small in comparison. The bigger cost is the overhead time for the employees to be focused on the training. And it's a great investment. The return on investment is almost immediate once they start using ANSYS. But we really recommend that people budget for overhead for training, and not just ANSYS training, but it's just good practice. And over the years, I've seen companies trying to get their bottom line to look better by cutting back on overhead, and that includes training. And, you know, setting aside, as management, you really should be setting aside training time for your employees to go someplace and take classes, and hopefully from PADT. And so if they want to know more, Ted, where do they go?
Well, they can email us at info@padtinc.com, info@padtinc.com. Or, as I mentioned earlier, go to our website, padtinc.com, and on there you'll see links for training under services that we offer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, under support, I think. Yeah, go to support.
Yeah, it's under services and under support.
Under support, both places. So people can find their way there. It'll give you a sample of the classes we offer as well, and of course we can do custom beyond that. So we could talk about training all day long, but we'll move on. It's something, you know, I've been doing since I started using ANSYS, actually was training other ANSYS users at my first employer. And it's one of the funnest things we get to do here at PADT, getting to know our customers in that environment is just very rewarding. So what's next? I think next is our commercial break. So we'll go ahead and take a few seconds to talk about something else we do here at PADT, and we'll be right back.
Ugh, hey Linda, I've been trying to run these simulations all day, but the stupid computer isn't fast enough.
Ugh, I know, Dave. I wish IT would give us better computers.
Oh, you know, that reminds me. A friend of mine was saying he got a simulation computer from someplace called PADT.
Hmm. What's so special about it?
Well, I guess they have this program called the Cube Computing Solutions, where they custom build simulation computers just to fit your needs with whatever you want, whatever graphics card you need, the amount of cores you need, whatever works best for you.
Huh. How do I get one of these?
Well, if I remember him correctly, he said you go to www.padtinc.com/cube. I think that's right.
Huh. Maybe we should tell the IT guy about this.
Yeah, maybe we should.
So let me talk about some upcoming events of interest. We're halfway through the month of October, so we're getting down to just a crazy amount of things to do rather than an insane amount of things to do. We just had actually a really good webinar yesterday. It was our best attended webinar in probably a couple years. It was on mechanical meshing enhancements in ANSYS 18 and beyond. We had about close to 100 people show up for that, and the recording is still there. So if you visit our website, you can find the link for that, or go to Bright Talk, which is the service we use, and I highly recommend you explore Bright Talk for things other than PADT as well as other things. It's a great professional. It's kind of YouTube for professionals. So it's seminars and talks and training in a really nice platform that we've been using for a couple seminars now. And I really, really like it for webinars. It's a great platform. So if you go to Bright Talk and just search on ANSYS, you'll find it, or come to our website. And that was yesterday, but the recording is there. Also, here in Phoenix, today is the Arizona Technology Council VIP Tech Mixer. I think we're at the one of the local University of Advanced Technology or something like that there in Phoenix. So we'll be meeting for that this evening. So if you're a member of the Tech Council, come on out. It's always a fun. The VIP Tech Mixers are always a lot of fun. And next week, another Tech Council event is for our customers down in Tucson. We hope to see you at the Southern Arizona Tech and Business Expo. This is for technology companies in Southern Arizona. It's kind of our annual get-together and party down there for everybody that does the nerdy things in the state. We've got some great talks from Paragon and Vector Aerospace. I want to say Secura Plane's going to talk. There's a whole bunch of good good companies giving presentations and booths and great networking opportunities. So if you're in Tucson, come on down for that. And of course, the next day, that was the 25th, on the 26th, here in our offices in Tempe at the Research Park is our Nerdtoberfest. This is our annual open house for our customers. We'd love to have everybody come out. We always get a big crowd. We've got some new things in 3D printing and in the ANSYS world to show you guys. So we look forward to seeing everybody at that. And then our next event is actually November 2nd, which is the Governor's Celebration of Innovation, and that's our final technology party for the state of Arizona. I think it's the fifth one, but I think it's the last one. And we're going to have – it's a little bit different this year. It's at Rawhide. If you haven't been in a while, I recommend you come out. It's going to be a lot more fun. Our booth's going to be interactive. We're going to have products that our customers have made. So we're going to have a leaf blower that they used CFX. I think they used CFX on that, guys, to model. A pooper scooper that we manufactured for a customer. Some stuff from some of our rocket companies we work with. And other interactive gizmos that we've helped people design, build, simulate, etc. So come out for that. So our next topic is actually our roundtable discussion and an in-depth topic. And what I want to talk about is something that's near and dear to our hearts here, which is customization. And we're lucky enough to have Matt, as he mentioned. That's kind of his primary area of work. And let me give a little bit of definition before we get into it. So when we talk about customization in the ANSYS world, what we're talking about is writing software. And that can be anything from a very simple script to full compiled software code that takes the core ANSYS product and either automates something or adds functionality to it. And we've been doing this since I started using ANSYS, did it with Fortran when there was no user interface. We basically wrote our own little tools and it was all text-based. And over the years, it's kind of grown and expanded to where we can customize the user interface, we can customize the solvers, and we can add functionality into almost every product. And so I wanted to really kind of get into that. So I'm gonna put Matt on here to talk about a topic that's got a 10-hour discussion possibility. But the question is, go ahead and let's start with ANSYS Mechanical, which is the one that we do the most work with. What are the different ways you can customize ANSYS Mechanical?
Well, it's kind of surprising the number of ways that you can, but the two probably most predominant. So if you split Mechanical into ANSYS Mechanical or Workbench or the user interface, and then you segregate that from like the MAPDL solver, when you're talking about Workbench, then nowadays you're going to be talking about ACT as far as the customization platform. And so ACT is a way to customize the user interface in particular within Mechanical. You can add in your own custom little widget-like things that live in the tree. So those can be loads or boundary conditions or really almost anything you can think up. And so that's how you can customize, the Mechanical side, the Workbench Mechanical side. But then obviously MAPDL sort of really set itself apart from the beginning from being so customizable with APDL in particular, but there are lots of ways you can even customize that. It's been a really long time, but we used to do that with Tickle and other interesting yes. approaches to customizing it. So I'm sure that's still available even to this day if
you really wanted to do it.
Yeah. If you really, really wanted to, yeah.
Good. And then, of course, you can get into the solver as well with Fortran and C, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So within Mechanical APDL in particular, we'll focus on that one for now. It's quite easy, surprisingly, to actually customize the solver itself. And so most recently for me, I've done some work where we've sort of customize the behavior of a couple of element types. So that's one thing you can do. You can customize how boundary conditions are going to be applied. You could even go so far as to write your own element if you were so inclined, or also customize like a material model or, the behavior of some material that may not be covered by one of the standard material models in the ANSYS library. So there are a lot of different ways there. Now, the primary thing to keep in mind there is your at least your entry point, and really the most streamlined way to do this is to stay within the Fortran environment when we're talking about ANSYS Mechanical and customizing the solver. So all the interface to the actual solver is going to be through Fortran. If you're really industrious and you just have to do it, you can write Fortran wrappers to and then write your actual guts of whatever you're doing in a different language than Fortran. But Fortran is going to be what you need. And with respect to that then as well, the other thing to keep in mind is that it's highly dependent upon the compiler version. I think if there's one thing that when we interact with customers that are actually doing their own customization and it comes to, trying to maybe recompile something for ANSYS, probably the number one support request we get is, why isn't this working? I've compiled it and it either crashes or it doesn't link or something, else goes wrong that's bad. And almost always the issue is that the customer doesn't have the exact version of the compiler that ANSYS used to compile the tools when they released them. So if it says, for example, that you need 15.0.7, 15.0.3 just won't work, even though you would think that it should.
Yeah. Yeah, so. it's a highly, highly optimized compile, and so if there's anything
absolutely
slightly out of whack, it just kind of goes kaflooey. So, I mean, it's funny. I was at an academic show, I guess you'd call it, for biomedical engineers last week. And so a lot of graduate students and postgrad students came up, and some of them were ANSYS users and noticed that I had that displayed, and they started talking about how they don't use ANSYS because they need to customize their material models, or they have to customize the solver, and so they're using maybe COMSOL, or they're using Abacus, and that's just not true. And
right.
I think it's really important that people recognize that all of those capabilities, all that ability to make your own elements or customize your material properties, is also in ANSYS as well. It's kind of we don't talk about it enough.
Yeah, just along that, just real quick on that same line, they've actually even taken steps recently to make that even more easy by allowing you to compile your code down to just DLLs that get dynamically loaded into ANSYS. So you're not having to sort of relink the whole thing. It makes it easier to share with other people in your organization. ANSYS is working to make that even easier than it was 5-10 years ago.
Great. And backing up a little bit to ACT, so we kind of got down there in the weeds on the solver side. I wanted to make people, sure people understand that. Actually, before we go back to ACT, also, unfortunately, the CFD guys are all at a customer site today, so I couldn't get them to join us to talk about Fluent. But Fluent has that same capability in that you can run,
right.
What do they call them, user maps?
UDFs, I believe, yes. User-defined functions or features, so...
Yeah.
And I think, too, just to go back to that whole compiler discussion, I think the compiler requirements are a little looser on the Fluent side. Don't quote me on it, but I'm pretty sure that they are.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different the way the linker works over there. But again, that's another thing where, you don't have the turbulence model you want or some sort of weird combustion behavior or chemical reaction. You can write your own subroutine to do that and compile it right in. So.
Yep.
Very powerful capability. And the user interface is also customizable over on that product as well, correct?
That's correct. And in fact, they're sort of branching ACT out to encompass more and more products, more and more physics. And so Fluent is one of those too. So.
Yeah, so let's talk about ACT. So it's the ANSYS Customization Toolkit, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. It's really a huge step forward for customization on the mechanical side. Eric knows this. In earlier years when I did some customization of mechanical, but I at that time it was limited to using JScript and HTML, and so I would sort of pound my head on Eric's door, and because it's not documented, and it was just kind of a challenge to to sort of figure it out. Well, ANSYS heard about that. They created ACT, it is documented. Not only is it documented, but it because it's exposed now, they try to make it compatible from version to version, mm-hmm. Which is a big step up, because they didn't have to worry about that with the JScript mm-hmm. stuff. It wasn't documented, so they could do whatever they wanted to with it. And so that's kind of ACT. It's you have actually a couple options when it comes to how you use it too. The overwhelming majority of folks are going to use Python to mm-hmm. as the language for customizing it. So which is most people probably know a scripting language, and there's support even for kind of delving into ACT directly within the mechanical application, just straight out of the box. So you can get to a little window to kind of play around and try things out. And so highly recommend that. It is possible, though, to use other .NET languages. And for me personally, I like using C# in ACT, and the reason being is just because the debugging experience is so much more rich with Visual Studio using C# as opposed to using Python, and for me that's kind of a enough of a an enhancement, if you will, or enough of a positive to overcome some of the other challenges associated with it.
You don't have to worry about tabs as well for your desktop.
Exactly.
it always gets me in Python.
My brain doesn't work that way. So.
But Python's really easy to learn. That's what I love about the ACT is that it's flexible. So if you're just doing something really simple, you can just throw some Python on there. But if you are doing like applications, which is basically what you're doing, C# is just and I agree, it's the writing and the debugging tool. It's a much more rigorous language and better tools for that. So, but it's open for both. The other issue with it is, well, not really an issue, but the other advantage of it is you can package these things up into applications. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can. You can make these, they call them extensions, and so you can package it all up. And again, this applies, doesn't matter whether you're doing Python, C#, whatever, but you can just kind of group it all up. The distribution model, if you will, is pretty straightforward. You just essentially you can sort of zip up a directory. It needs to have a particular form, but you just kind of zip up a directory and you can provide it to people within your organization, and they can unzip that directory and then point Workbench to that particular directory. And when they do that, then their extension will sort of magically appear and can be used at that point. And you can even also create full installation versions of it that you can distribute by that model as well. So they've done a lot of work to try to make it as easy as possible to get it out to other people. If you're doing this to sort of help out a larger group of folks in your organization or whatever, Ansys has tried to make that that easy as possible.
And you can even upload it to the App Store, correct?
There may be a little bit of a vetting process, but yeah, you can mm-hmm. upload it and share it. You can even, I guess, they have a model by which you could develop these for some money if you want, so you can charge people money to download it from the App Store as well.
Cool. I think the other thing to point out is one of the customization things we do is connect the Workbench platform to external solvers. So why don't you talk about that as a customization capability?
Yeah. So that's one of the real strengths of mechanical, the interface and so forth, is it's and all the other associated tools around it, is the geometry, manipulation, cleanup, and all that, and the meshing. And so if you have a solver that just requires a mesh, and you can specify the inputs and outputs, or in particular the inputs to that solver, maybe a text file or something, then you can use mechanical as the preprocessor for that solver, and then automatically you get all of that great functionality that's really hard to develop mm-hmm. yourself. kind of out of the box. And so it does make a very good sort of general purpose pre-processing, post-processing tool as well.
Yeah, like I said, when we started, we could spend 10 hours on this because we're just scratching the surface. I'm thinking about other things. Ted, did you want to add anything about customization? Ted may be muted.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. He's probably muted or he took a phone call. So the other thing that I want to ask you is, okay, I want to do customization. Where do I start?
Sure. Well, there are some examples on the customer portal, so you can get some training material from ANSYS, that would sort of give you a quick start or first start. My suggestion would be to start there, but start small as you would with anything. And then, of course, we are available as well for. You can reach out to us and if you have simple questions that we can answer really quickly, we might be able to help you with that. But then also just as far as, doing it as a service, that's really how I spend most of my days. And so that's available as well.
Yeah. So if we had more time, and maybe that's next time we are able to get you on, what we'll do is talk a little bit about some of the customizations you've done, some examples, because I think without getting specific, because I know that some of them we can't talk about the customer or what they are doing, but in general terms, and also maybe get to talk about some of the other products. The other one I want to mention is that we're very excited about the fact that Space Claim is now scriptable.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's really powerful. That's something they've just added in. We've been taking advantage of that at PADT for some various customers. And not only is it scriptable though, but this has been around for a little bit longer. In fact, shortly after I even opened up Space Claim and started actually using it as a user, I was kind of tasked with starting to customize it as well. But you can actually make your own set of little tools, kind of like the Space Claim, like the pull tool, or you can actually do that, where you can create, toolbar buttons that show up, and then they can those little buttons that show up in the graphics window to help you kind of guide your usage through the tool. All of that is open to you, and you can make your own little features that maybe Space Claim is, as we all know, it's pretty rich as it is right now. But if there's some little things that it doesn't do that you would like to do, you can do that. And the beauty of Space Claim too is because it's just geometry. It doesn't impose that hierarchical structure on things and so forth. It's really amenable to customizing, and so that's kind of a nice sort of added benefit of just the way it works.
Yeah, one thing I like about it is it's journaled while you're running the user interface. So if you turn on the journaling mode while you're creating geometry, it's creating what I would call a journal file or a log file of the equivalent scripting commands. And so you can start with that and then make edits to it and modify it to do what you really need.
I think it's a really good example of we talk about the whole analysis process where we start with geometry and then we mesh and then we apply boundary conditions and then we solve and then we post-process. Every one of those steps is customizable now, and so there's really no reason why you can't create a vertical application or look at maybe your most time-consuming part of your process and say, how can I automate this to make it go faster? And we love it here. So please do look around. Please do ask us questions for more, and we're going to come back to this topic in the future. But I said this was going to be a short podcast, and we're already at 45 minutes. So
droned on and on.
Well, no, I think, like I said, this is one of our favorite topics. I love customization, and a lot of times, I'll add one more thing of why I love it is I'll get asked a lot by people who aren't necessarily simulation people is why is ANSYS a billion-dollar company? Why have they succeeded? Why was this mechanical engineering software company able to buy all these other software tools and put it into the family? And one of the main reasons, besides just smart management and good solvers, is the customization capability. That we could always find a way to do what we wanted to do. with these products, because we could always customize them to make it more efficient and to do things that maybe didn't come out of the box. So it's a huge competitive advantage if you're using Ansys. Use customization.
Jives with one of my long-term sayings about Ansys, which is, with Ansys, there's always a way.
Yeah. Yep. All right. I'm gonna stop because I want to keep talking about it. let's move on to Ansys news. So the stock is up to $129 a share, and it was actually over 131 earlier this week, so it almost hit its high again this week. But we'll see how it comes. I think that's because the earnings call is going to be November 1st, so people are speculating on whatever that call is going to be. Who knows? I don't understand Wall Street. I say that every week. But just so you know, the company's doing well. And I think because we're headed into earnings releases, they don't release any news usually before that, so we have no news from Ansys Inc. itself. But there were three really good blog posts since the last podcast we did. One that I found really interesting was from the people that work with medical devices at Ansys Inc., and it's a blog post on an insulin delivery system. And what's nice about it is it's looking at system simulation. So usually we talk about a given physics, but this is a really good example of building a complex system and modeling this true multiphysics system using the Ansys system modeling tools. So definitely take a look at that. And then kind of for fun, some students built a liquid rocket engine. So, you know, most student rockets are solid boosters, right? They actually built a liquid rocket engine, and they used Ansys to help them do that. That was kind of fun. And then, you know, our most popular podcast was on topological optimization, where we discussed how I can't pronounce that word. And there was a recent blog post in the Ansys blog about using Genesis, which is a third-party topo-opt tool that we use here occasionally that sits on top of Ansys, and it now supports superelements. So if you're not familiar with superelements in the mechanical world, that's the ability to take your mesh and turn it into a single element that behaves the same as the full model. And so you're only solving a relatively small number of equations versus all the equations in that part. And so you just leave the part you want to optimize as normal elements, and the rest is a superelement, and you can get much quicker turnaround time on your topological optimization. So do take a look at that article if you're interested in topological optimization. Do you guys have any other news stories to add?
I don't think of anything right now.
Yeah, there was a patch release to Ansys 18.2 that came out in the last week or so. So customers might want to check on the Ansys customer portal to get the details of that patch.
And you'll see that more often in the new release scheme, is we'll see more features come out in point releases, and then we'll see patches as well, so they're able to release software a little bit quicker for us. The last thing I want to talk about news-wise is very sad news. Those of you who have been in the Ansys world for a long time may remember the Ansys mechanical product manager, Ray Browell, for many years. Ray was the Ansys mechanical guy in product management, and he unfortunately passed away yesterday. It was very sad news that I found out late last night and still kind of dealing with today. He's responsible for a lot of features in Ansys that we know and love. He was always known as the user's advocate and would go to bat for us and for our customers on a regular basis when it came time to where resources were spent on the software. And it's really sad to hear of his passing. If you're connected to the Ansys headquarters or know people in the mechanical organization, send your kind thoughts their way. They're all kind of in shock because he's a key guy there for many, many years. Which is kind of a sad note to finish on. Sorry about that, but I thought people would want to know if they knew Ray. We'll definitely miss his involvement in our world. So I'm going to say goodbye with that, but I'll pass it off to Ted. I don't know, Matt, if you know this, but when we say goodbye, we like to say a few words of wisdom, a joke, or some advice, and it doesn't have to be Ansys related. So I'll let Ted go first.
Well, I think we've said this one before, but I'll say it again. In performing simulations, we always try to instill in our students, when we're teaching them how to use the tools, the philosophy of crawl, walk, run. Start with something simple, a fairly small model. Make sure you understand what it's doing. Then add the complexity.
That's a really good point, and applies to both of our topics today.
Yeah, I can't think of anything that would apply more appropriately than to customization. So I'll echo that. I'll just add one more to Ted. Then, if you at any point, whether you're crawling, walking, or running, you stumble or get stuck, then just reach out to us. Even if it's a quick question, we may be able to answer it immediately. But then, obviously, when it comes to the customization side of things, at least that's I feel like an area that we can help a lot of folks out with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Well, I appreciate everybody listening. This is Eric Miller saying goodbye, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for joining us on this 7th episode of the All Things ANSYS podcast. We'd like to dedicate this episode to the memory of our good friend and colleague, Ray Browell. He will be missed. As a reminder, this podcast is not affiliated in any way with ANSYS Inc., and the opinions expressed are those of the people on the show only. For more information, visit www.padtinc.com/blog. And please share your thoughts and questions through an email to podcast@padtinc.com. See you next time.